lads here have tested their own slurry because they want to use it judiciously across the farm, and their dry matter is just over 8%, which is above the national average, and their nitrogen is coming out about 70% higher per meters cubed. The phosphorus about 60%, and the potassium is a little bit down. It's about 20% less than the national average. But this is a finishing diet, high concentrate fed diet, relative to probably a more grass-based system.
Every farmer aims to grow crops in healthy soils, but long-term intensive tillage will result in soils which are tired and less resilient to weather shocks, resulting in poorer crops. The addition of organic manure generally gives these soils a boost, not just in the year of application, but also for a period of time thereafterwards. You are listening to the latest episode of The Tillage Edge with me, Michael Hennessy. I would really appreciate it if you could listen, follow, and give us a review on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from. Last week, Chagas held a signpost farm event on the Keepack farm just outside Dunboyne, County Meath. We looked at trying to maximise slurry application to tillage ground, but in particular, the application to growing crops which can get the best out of applied slurries. On this Keepack site we visited, it farms 314 hectares with almost all of that land in tillage. The farm also fattens 1500 beef animals at any one time and puts through roughly 5000 cattle a year. Before the event started, I caught up with Sam Miles, the farm manager, to get an overview of the farm and how he is utilising slurry on the tillage enterprise. I first asked Sam, what changes has the farm made on the tillage enterprise over the last few years to make the system more sustainable?
One of the things we would have been practicing on the farm here was a three crop or a four crop rotation, where we were putting in a break crop every 3 or 4 years. So we were sort of doing that already.
So describe that to me. That was...
So we started off with a crop of maize in the springtime. We follow that up with a crop of winter wheat then after. The following year then we'll go with a crop of winter barley, and then we might put it into a crop of spring beans or spring barley, or back into maize. So that's sort of how we rotated the different fields around the farm.
Okay.
We were kind of getting good yields off the back of that. Since training signposts, I suppose some of the things we started looking at was the cover crops over the winter. So we try and have the farm in green cover all winter to avoid nutrient loss. So that was one of the big things we've done. And the other big thing that we have been doing the last 2 years is putting slurry direct out on our winter barley and winter wheat in the spring of the year. So we're on a bit of a journey with that there. The first year we probably went a wee bit too early. Where we're trying to get the timing off that more exact now to get the maximum value from the nitrogen in the slurry.
Okay, and that's kind of, I suppose, primarily what we're looking at here today in terms of the crowd. I see is gathering outside, and we'll get out there in a second. In terms of slurry, you mentioned you're putting through 5,000 cattle a year here. That's an awful lot of slurry. How much slurry are you producing from the unit?
Typically we can produce enough slurry to do about 1,000 acres, about 3,000 gallons an acre. So we have a large land base here on our own farm, but we also have a number of neighbouring tillage farmers that we're exporting slurry off to as well. So they're seeing the value in taking that slurry onto their own farm.
Okay, so you're doing a bit on doing as much as you can on your own farm and then exporting the rest. So you're looking at an in-crop scenario, applying it to a growing crop. What were you doing before this, up till now, in terms of the slurry?
I suppose we were putting it in the spring of the year, we were putting it out on the stubble before the maize or the spring barley was sown. And then in the tail end of the year, we were putting it out on the stubble ground before the winter barley and winter wheat was sown.
Okay.
So we've moved away from that, and we're trying to put it out on the winter barley and winter wheat in the springtime of the year.
And you're trying to move away from the autumn application altogether, are you?
As much as possible. I suppose we have a beef enterprise here that works all year round, so we probably have a small percentage that will have to go out in the autumn of the year, but we try and minimise that as best we can.
And you're matching that into any of the cover crops?
Some of them, yeah. So we'll encourage them on. We try and export as much as we can off the farm at the latter half of the year, because other tillage farmers is requiring it as well.
So you have a big tillage unit here, and you have a lot of slurry going out on it. I presume you have a nutrient management plan to figure out what goes where and balance it up.
Yeah, so me and Conal Callaghan, our Tragus advisor there, would look at that and see what levels of soil we can put out on the different fields. I suppose we've been doing the soil sampling now every 3 years as well, so we have an idea of where our soil indexes are.
What way are they? Are they, given all the slurry that you have here, there's a lot to be going out onto the large tillage operation. Do you have a nutrient management plan to know what goes where?
Yeah, so myself and Conor O'Callaghan work out the nutrient management plan.
Conor's your Tragus advisor?
That's our Tragus advisor here. We do the soil sampling here on the farm, and most of them are index 3. Some of them is slightly higher, so we'll actually make reductions on them fields that are at the higher levels, and they're primarily the ones closer to the yard. So we have to send the slurry a wee bit further away. And then we're not buying any compound fertilizer then. We haven't bought any over the last 3 years here on the farm, and we're just able to buy protected urea now to top up the crops when we need to over the year.
Okay, so you're able to maintain your potash levels as well. That seems to be going pretty okay in the whole thing.
Yeah, no, everything else seems to be on target, and I suppose because we're feeding the cattle here in the yard so intensively, you know, the value of that slurry is quite high compared to maybe your normal maybe dairy slurry or that as well. The nutrient value of it is quite high.
It's relatively high dry matter stuff.
It is, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
In terms of the system, how are you spreading that slurry out onto the tillage ground?
I suppose the last 3 years now we're using umbilical as much as possible, using a 12-metre dribble bar then applying it on the field. And then our contractor there now, he has four and a half thousand gallon tankers then further on the slurry, further away from the farm as well, you know, so we're applying that then. The bulk of the farm, there's about 240 hectares here located in Colstown Dunbine, and then we have the remainder of that then is about 8 kilometres away in the village in Tranee, so we're bringing it in there as well.
And of the proportion of slurry that you're applying to the tillage ground, how much of that are you able to get out onto the growing crops?
Probably about half of it, or maybe a bit more. So it'll depend on what crops we get sown within a given year. Now, I know the last 12 months has been an extreme challenge, but we would always have close to 120, 140 hectares of winter barley and winter wheat in total. Mm. So we're able to put the slurry application and all that then.
And obviously you're continuing on that, you say you're tweaking it a bit, but you're relatively happy with how that's going.
Yeah, no, it's surprising how effective it is, you know, and you think the damage that machinery is going to do on them crops, but it's minimal compared to the cost of what that compound fertilizer is going to cost us as well.
Off the top of your head, do you know how much nitrogen you're applying to winter barley as a top up to the slurry?
Well, we're aiming for about 140, 150 units. So we're topping up about 100 units. I think the slurry's giving us that 30, 40 units of nitrogen.
Okay. Well, that's a big saving along with the P&K saving as well.
It's significant, like, you know. So we have figures on the boards here today that we're going to show farmers, you know, in terms of how much it would cost to see the slurry going out versus buying a compound fertilizer as well.
Sure. And you mentioned the tweaks that you've obviously been using the umbilical cover system for a while now in the growing crop. You say there's tweaks that you're going to make. What's the couple of areas that you think that you can improve on a little bit?
I suppose the timing of the applications is probably the big one.
Right.
So year one, we put it at the end of January because it was a dry period. Probably we didn't get the full nitrogen uptake in that, you know, so they've been telling me that last week February, you know, and generally into the month of March there for 3 or 4 weeks is the optimum time for putting that slurry application on. So it's about being ready to do that when the time comes.
So it's really the timing rather than the machinery or any of your kind of stuff. You're happy enough with that?
More or less, there's a couple of contractors in the area that's well equipped to do that slurry spreading in that way. We're using a 12-metre dribble bar. We run our tram lines at 24, so we're catching all the tram lines across the field, and then we're splitting them all once, so it's just one run up and down, and generally you would notice it then when it comes to harvesting the row crop is recovered.
Okay, and speaking of harvest, last question I'm going to ask you, because I know we're just about to head out here. The last question is around, so you're producing an awful lot of grain and an awful lot of maize. Are you using all that on the farm, or are you selling it and buying it back in afterwards?
No, so we're most of what we grow here we can use on the farm. So we're using our own maize, we're using our own barley. We might swap out some of the wheat, and then we have all our own straw as well. So about 70% of what we feed the cattle here, we can get it off our own land block.
Okay.
And then we just buy in the rest as balancing materials for our rations.
And my thanks to Sam for the overview of the tillage enterprise. I also chatted to Veronica Nine, a soil nutrient specialist in Chagas, and John Mann, the Signpost Farm Advisor, about how to correctly assess and get the best from slurries. I started by asking Veronica what sort of value is in slurry.
So in per meter cubed of slurry, we generally contains 1 kg per of nitrogen, 0.5 a kg of phosphorus, and about 3.5 kgs of potassium. Now that 1 kg is available for nitrogen. The phosphorus is available at 100% if applied to a high P soil, but if it's applied to an index 1 or index 2 soil, it's only 50% available. So that's the national standard and national average. But when we look at individual systems, the results are very variable. The type of stock, the age of the stock and the diet of the stock massively influence the nutrient composition and then water content as well.
Okay. So just in terms of a question around the, so you can measure all of this, you can measure what's in it, you can send it away and you can measure it. But is there a difference, or will the Department of Agriculture take into account if it's slurry? If I've got a measurement, here's what mine looks like, it's very different to what the department say it is. Which one will the department go with?
So the standard will be what's used by the department. Okay. Now, if you're using digestates and stuff like that, you can declare a different nutrient content. But for slurry, it's the standard. So let's take, for example, I'm getting slurry from a neighbour and it's well watered down. Say it's dairy slurry coming out from the back of a milking parlour that's washed down the milking parlour. So high levels of water. It might only be 4% dry matter. But which would mean it'd be diluted for P and K particularly, yet I'll have to account for it as if it was 6% dry matter and use the figures I just called out accordingly.
So the farm, to a degree, will be missing nutrients.
Absolutely.
Because it's there, she didn't bring them in.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll have to take a hit, my allowance, I won't be filling my allowance because the slurry will be of less value than what I have to put down on paper.
Okay. And simply then going into tillage crops, obviously slurry is pretty good for tillage crops, but if you're putting a fairly decent dressing of slurry on at the right time onto tillage crops, how much of the overall nutrients can the slurry account for?
So if you're putting out 3,000 gallons on a standing crop, to the standing crop of winter wheat, in 3,000 gallons application of at the standard measurements, you're putting out all the potassium allowance, you're putting out about half of the phosphorus allowance, and that's if it's an index 3 soil, and you're putting out about a quarter of the nitrogen, which matches the requirements of the crop at that given time.
Okay, so it's very significant, really, in the overall.
A huge saving and bringing a lot of other benefits as well as just the NPK value. So it really is an area that we need to start moving into. And from a gaseous emissions, chemical fertiliser is the challenge for the tillage sector, and this is one way around it.
Okay. You talked about the slurry in terms of the nutrient content of slurry. We're here on the Signpost Farm here in Keepack. They produce an awful lot of slurry out here. And there's a way of testing that, and in terms of the nutrient content, we have it tested a little bit, and in terms of the nutrient content, what's the difference of the slurry from this Keepack farm in comparison to your standard slurry? How is it different?
Well, the lads here have tested their own slurry because they want to use it judiciously across the farm, and they're dry matter is just over 8%, which is above the national average. And their nitrogen is coming out about 70% higher per meters cubed. The phosphorus about 60%. And the potassium is a little bit down. It's about 20% less than the national average. But this is a finishing diet, high concentrate fed diet relative to probably a more grass-based system.
And that's why you'd expect the phosphate to be much higher in this than...
Absolutely. Well, the results that we're working off for the national average are based on a mix of beef and dairy. So it's encompassing a much broader diet and different types of systems, whereas this is finishing, and it wouldn't be unusual to see higher levels of P and nitrogen because of the nature of the feed.
Thanks very much, Veronica, for that assessment of the nutrient content in slurries. I then turned to John Mann, who's the Signpost Farm Advisor, and asked John, how would somebody assess dry matter of slurries on the farm? And obviously, having knowledge of that will give an indication of the nutrient content in that slurry.
Well, Michael, there's two ways of testing the dry matter on the slurry. First of all, I suppose you can go about it by sending it to a laboratory. There's a second method then is a hydrometer. But before you do all of that, it's incumbent that the slurry is well mixed, well agitated. Now, if you're dealing with quite a thick slurry, that can take several hours of agitation. It can be half an hour or an hour with quite watery slurry. But that's incumbent that you have that and that you have a representative sample to
test.
And
at what point, John, do you take that sample? Is that from the slurry when you're putting it just directly at the field, or are you taking it out of the tank, or where are you taking it from?
Well, depending on what you're trying to do, if you were going to do a laboratory analysis, you would take it from the tank. Now, it's incumbent that you have health and safety, proper ventilation at it. You take it as near as you can to the agitator. So if that's going for an analysis in a laboratory, the second and really simple tool to use would be to use a hydrometer. And a hydrometer, ideally, from the tanker, and there's a tap fill point on the tanker itself. If you took a container, it must be at least 12 inches deep of slurry from that. A hydrometer, which tests it's the bulk density.
So you have a hydrometer here in front of you. What does that look like?
Basically, as you can see, it's a bulbous bottom on it, and it goes into a top part here, which is all graduated, and this is specifically graduated for slurries.
So I'm just watching you here with the slurry. So you're tipping the slurry now into, it's like a big, long, tall, graduated cylinder. You're saying it's 12 inches deep. It kind of needs to be that. Is that what you said?
Yeah, you need a minimum of 12 inches deep, whether that be a bucket or a cylinder, as we have here for our own test here. But it's incumbent that you have enough of a depth on it and it's well mixed.
And so this hydrometer that's only about, it's 10 or 10 inches
approximately long, 10 inches long here.
That's why you need the taller thing. Okay, I get you right. So I see you now, you're placing the hydrometer nice and gently into it, or does it matter?
It's really important that it's gently dropped into it. And the second most important part of it, I suppose, was that you leave it there long enough. So as you can see, it's gradually, really, really slowly dropping down into it.
I see it's dropping in a little bit. Yeah.
So it's really important that you leave this at least a minute. Even in quite watery slurries, it can take a while to settle out. And just we'll give it its time and it'll settle out, and we read off of that directly the dry matter.
So I'm looking at on the side of the hydrometer, there's numbers on that, and I see it's after settling out fairly well, John. What does the numbers mean? And you have a number there. What does that mean?
Yeah, so if you look at the side of it there, Michael, it's just dropped quite just on below the 8 mark there. It's around 7, 7.5. So basically what we're reading there is the actual reading for the dry matter of this slurry that we're dealing with here. So what we do then is that we will take that and then read off this chart here, this table one.
So there's a table depending on the slurry that you have and the dry matter that's in it, it'll give a N, P and K. Is that how it works?
Yeah. So this table has been devised. We have dry matters of 1 to 10% for the cattle here. So corresponding to each of those, we have an N, P and a K, kgs per meter cubed, or units per 1,000 gallons. So we directly read off of this, and that will give you your actual amounts from that's been scientifically proven that this is the content of that slurry. So we we will use that figure then to create our application rate.
Okay, of which it goes into a nutrient management plan and a kind of a day-to-day application rate. So just finally, the final question to you, John, is Keepak here are obviously using an awful lot of slurry. How well do you think they're using it? Have they changed their system over the last couple of years, do you think, in terms of trying to utilise it a little bit better?
Traditionally, the farm here would have been like any other farm, where a lot of this slurry would have been applied in the autumn to the winter crops. It would have been put onto the stubble ground, ploughed down, and an autumn crop of winter wheat or winter barley sown. So the concept here is that we're applying it now by umbilical system onto the growing crop, and it's really important that the crop is growing and will be able to take up the nitrogen, and we've better nitrogen use efficiency on it. So this system here, and has been demonstrated today, is an umbilical system where we pump the slurry directly onto a growing crop today of winter wheat. The crop is at late tillering, it's ahead of stem extension and is due its first nitrogen. So what we're trying to do, as Veronica has said, we're trying to replace the first nitrogen that goes on and the P and K that crop would need.
And just talking to the farmers up there as part of that demonstration, I think the bit that they were really impressed by was how little damage was being done in the field, because the from what I can make out, John, and correct me if I'm wrong, the tractor was coming up in the middle of the tram lines and going back down to the other tram lines and so on and so forth up and down the field. But it doesn't seem to be tracking a whole lot. Does that come through later on in the crop at all?
When you asked that question last year, we myself and Connor, the local Chagas advisor, prior to harvest, we took samples because there seemed to be wheelings that could be visible right through in the season. And honestly, it was insignificant when we actually worked it out on a per hectare basis.
Okay, so it's pretty much rules itself out over time, and the crop can recover anyway.
Absolutely, yeah.
Great. John, look, I see there's lots of other people here wanting to talk to you here after this. Thanks very much for your time. Delighted, and we'll chat to you again.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike.
So that's it for this episode, and my thanks to Sam, Veronica and John for joining me on the podcast. Finally, if you enjoyed the podcast, then recommend it to a friend or colleague, and as always, rate, review and follow on Apple or Spotify so you never miss an episode. And for more information, go to chagas.ie. I'm Michael Hennessy, thanks for listening, and I'll be back next week with more tillage news and advice.